Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. What makes an engineering or design icon? Is it strictly the design or combination of design and engineering, or does location and environment play a role? Well, my guest today is an architect whose newest work has already become an icon and the project isn't even open to the public yet. Donald McDonald's a Canadian-born, San Francisco-based architect that has designed high-rises, distinctive homes, even an earthquake-proof bed. But he and his firm are best known for designing distinctive and elegant bridges. McDonald is the architect of the new east span of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge, scheduled to open in September of this year. The bridge will be the world's largest single self-anchored suspension bridge in the world. It has already been utilized for logos by the NBA's Golden State Warriors and in advertising and promotion across the Bay Area. And the bridge is over 25 years in the making. McDonald, who was trained in architecture at the University of Oklahoma, is the designer of bridges and bridge projects around the world, even here in Oklahoma. He's the architect of the Willamette Valley Bridge in Oregon, the Ravenel Bridge in Charleston, South Carolina, and a major bridge linking Dubai to the mainland. He's also retrofitted the Golden Gate Bridge and has written a book about that bridge and also about Alcatraz Island. He completes what he calls his Bay Trilogy with his latest book, Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon, which not only illustrates and tells the story of his design, but of the whole history of the first Bay Bridge, the natural history of the area, and the transportation history of this location, all of which are part of the architect's design process. The name of the book, Bay Bridge, Donald McDonald joins us by phone today on Studio Tulsa. Donald McDonald, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's nice to talk to an Oklahoman again.
Yes, we should mention, although your practice is based on the West Coast, you went to school at the University of Oklahoma, and I guess you were right after Bruce Goff left the architecture department.
Yeah, I started there, and then I got a great scholarship to do my master's at Columbia in New York, and then I came and taught at University of California, Berkeley, for a few years, and settled in San Francisco, and I've been here ever since. I had a fine education there, by the way.
Now, you've built all sorts. You've built high-rises, you've built houses, you've built even an earthquake-proof bed at one point.
Right.
but we know you today now as a bridge designer and an architect of bridges. And, of course, a major bridge is going to come to completion here in the next few weeks of the east span of the San Francisco Bay Bridge. And this sounds like this is an incredibly challenging project.
It has been. I've been on it 16 years, if you can imagine. We won a limited competition back in 1997-98, and then they got started in 2002. But it's been a long road home. It's been full of politics and things like that. But what was interesting about it is that the city, Oakland in particular, and even the Bay in general, wanted a signature bridge. And the thing about that is that more and more cities want bridges that are give them branding rights to their city. We did a bridge in Charleston, South Carolina, the Cooper River Bridge. It's Arthur Revelle III Jr. or something like that, but it's a big monument now, and it goes on letterheads. It's like we have the Golden Gate for San Francisco. It's very important to brand cities when you have the opportunity. And the beauty of bridges is that they're designed now to last at least 100 years, and so you've got a real symbol of the city, and it should be well done. And the way it gets, beautifully designed is when they bring an architect and an engineer and they put them together. And if they work well together, you get a better bridge.
For a long time, when you think of our iconic bridges like the Golden Gate, the Brooklyn Bridge, the George Washington Bridge, these were beautiful, sleek bridges. And then at some point, it was about putting a slab of concrete over whatever you're bridging as quickly as possible. What do you think has led to that revival of the aesthetics?
Well, I think what's happened is that the engineers for a long time, since World War II in essence, have been just, I hate to use the term, but jamming bridges through communities without any public input. And now the public is getting better educated, and also that cities, like I mentioned, are branding themselves with some objects, and bridges are a big part of it. So you find that the public wants more aesthetic treatments to bridges. And so they're demanding in many cases that you hire an architect. And now I call myself a bridge architect, and there are not that many in the United States that have done the kind of work I have, or the volume in bridges. So it's an area that there's a lot of demand for great aesthetics, and so it's a real opportunity. It has been for me to be one of the first people to get involved in that.
Now, is there still a great demand for bridges? I mean, you think of, we've been building infrastructure in this country for 80 years designed for the car, or even longer for the train and the car. You would think that all the needed bridges would be mainly there. It's mainly about replacing old ones and demolishing old ones and putting up new ones. But is there still a great demand for building bridges in this country?
Well, basically, that's where the demand is right now. Is our infrastructure, particularly bridges in general, are in, a lot of them are in disrepair, and there's not a lot of replacements coming out. In fact, we were in a competition we just came out of a couple of months ago for the Tappan Zee Bridge in New York, which is about a $4 billion project. And that bridge is only 60 years old, and it's collapsing, so now they're going to tear it down and put up a new one. And so the idea is that the Engineering News Record, which is a national magazine that comes out weekly on the infrastructure in America, basically is, they say there's over 100,000 bridges that have to be taken down or replaced or repaired. And so in California alone, we have 10,000. So, you know, all these areas, there's a bridge that collapsed up in the I-5 corridor near Seattle, and it was just a truck hit a crossbeam and it went down. So there's a lot of stuff that was built that doesn't have redundancies in it, and there's a lot of corrosion. There's just a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done within America, and it's amazing sometimes we spend so much money abroad that we don't take care of our own infrastructure.
Yeah, well, of course, the Bay Bridge, you've written a book about the Bay Bridge. I actually think you also wrote a book about the Golden Gate Bridge.
And it's, I did.
I assume it was about the time you were doing retrofitting for the Golden Gate Bridge, creating some walkways and suicide barriers and the
right.
like for that bridge. But you've written a book, and what's really interesting is how you approach a design project, because this book doesn't start with even the building of the first Bay Bridge. It goes back to how people got across the bay before there was any sort of motorization at all. You actually begin the book with Indians and how they would cross the bay from the San Francisco side to the Oakland side.
Right. Now, I think what's happened is that the automobile has been a big changer in everything. And the fact is that we need to have bridges now that, you know, stand up in earthquakes. And so the Golden Gate, when we retrofitted that, and I was the first architect to actually work on it since the original architects. I've been working on it since about 1980. And I started in bridges. I was lucky to start with that one. I did the toll plaza, redid that. And then after the Loma Prieta earthquake in 89, they wanted to retrofit that bridge, and they wanted to retrofit the Bay Bridge. And so the idea is the governor set out a proclamation that these bridges should be designed so if there's another major earthquake, they'll both survive, and there'll be a link to San Francisco and the Bay Area where those two bridges would survive the quake. So they had to be retrofitted so they would take a bigger seismic hit. And so I set the design guidelines for retrofitting the Golden Gate. And of course, that was pretty complicated, and so we really got into a lot of details, and other engineers heard I'd been working on it, passed my name around, and so pretty soon I had a lot more bridges.
Well, I would think working on the Golden Gate Bridge, that's kind of like, you know, the art restorer working on a masterpiece.
Right.
Probably there's 10 people looking over your shoulder as you do every little bit of the job, and, you know, you're at the same time, you know, you got to make sure your hand's not shaking when you're touching something like that. Was that daunting?
Well, I think what was really interesting is that nobody had sat down and analyzed, if you can believe this, you know, how the architect approached the design. So after I got so much information out of and studied historical records on it, because it is a landmark, it has a status with the federal highways, that, you know, you can't play around with it too much. But there are rules of solids and voids, and there's a whole technique to come into a structure that's historic like that and maintain its integrity. But when you do anything to it, you have to do it in the state of the art at the moment of, you know, whichever civilization you're in and where you're at. So you have to study that. So what I usually do is I study the intent of the architect and the engineer in the history of the design, and then I go into pulling those details out. And what's really interesting on the Golden Gate, and it's also on the new Bay Bridge, is there's a lot of redundancy. That means parts of the bridge that are not structural, they're there for looks. And most people don't realize that. So when I pull parts off the bridge and I show the public what's working and what's decoration, it's quite interesting because the Golden Gate Bridge is just full of it. Like, if I don't know if you've been out here and remember, but there's an arch over Fort Point. on the Golden Gate, and that arch is a phony arch, and the architect put it there to frame the Fort Point area before the engineers had just run the suspension cable right into the ground right above it, and it, you know, created tension. It didn't, so the arch hid that cable that had come into the ground, the suspension cable. So those kind of techniques are pretty evident, at least on the Golden Gate. So on the Bay Bridge, I've got the link beams in the towers are covered with plates. There's elements. I use a pentagon as a constant shape throughout the bridge, so the vocabulary of the bridge ties itself together with this form. On the Golden Gate, they use a chevron form. The chevron form on the Golden Gate does nothing but breaks large spaces up so the shadow patterns are much more refined. And then on the Bay Bridge, the pentagon, I took it from there's a technique in architecture that's been used since the Renaissance. It was really refined, where in the Renaissance, they tried to work out formulas to make beautiful art. And so there's a thing called the rule of thirds. There's the golden section, the golden triangle. When you work with these forms, they're all mathematical. And so you put them into a bridge, and in that case, where I used the pentagon on the Bay Bridge, the engineers then can calculate it because those forms already come out of mathematics and then go into calculations for stresses and things like that. So it's a pretty interesting process. Like the rule of thirds, for instance, applies where, let's say you take a picture and an amateur might put the horizon in the middle of the picture, where a professional will either put a third from the bottom or a third from the top. Mm-hmm. Not an absolute rule, but it's one you should check when you're taking photographs. So I do the same thing on bridges. I put the deck a third of the height of the tower. The light fixtures and light poles are a third. They bracket the top third. A lot of parts on the bridge, I use that theory. The other thing I do is that when you have a parallel lines that rise in space, your eye sort of widens the lines as they get to the top of that parallelogram. It's because of the lens in your eye is curved, you know, so when you look at it, so what you do is step it back. And I did that on the tower on the Bay Bridge. It's also the same thing that's been done on the Golden Gate. If you think of Rockefeller Center and things like that, where the buildings rise and they step them back, they were not only to keep the sun on the streets, but they're also to give it a different kind of scale and taper it up as it rose into the sky.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm looking at one of your illustrations in the book about the Bay Bridge, which shows, you know, you in the middle, for those who have not been out there, there are actually two spans. There's the west span and the east span. You designed the bridge for the east span, and you put a new pedestrian bridge on the west span, but the west span still is there. But one of the things you did is you have an island in the middle. It's a Yerba Buena Island, and that's a rise out of the seashore, if you will, or the bay shore. And then you have these concave forms of the two bridges, and that's actually just perfect art.
Right. No, that's the other thing we do is we look at the context the bridge is in. We look for hills, mountains. I've done a bridge that's under construction in Portland, and I peeked the top of the towers because in the distance there are mountain peaks. And there's things like that that generate the form. And you try to do it so it evolves out of the bay or the region you're in, so that area has a bridge that's truly its own and it's come out of the forms that are around it. It's like contextual design and buildings where you try to tie it into the neighborhood using cues or clues, metaphorically speaking, using other forms to bring it into the structure so that it becomes part of that region. And that's even part of branding. How do you brand a city with a bridge? Like the Golden Gate, it has a kind of a terracotta color to it they call International Orange. And then the soil beyond the bridge is iron pyrites in it, so there's a rusty-looking soil. Or cliffs, and so it kind of ties into the region just color-wise like that.
Do you think the architect was thinking about that? Because when you think about the construction of the original Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate, these went up pretty quick, didn't they? They went up in a matter of a couple of years or two or three years.
Yeah, the Bay Bridge was up within about 3.5 years, and the Golden Gate was 4 years. In fact, the Bay Bridge was done, 6 months before the Golden Gate, and it was really probably just as great a feat as the Golden Gate was because it was first time they put two suspension bridges together, you know. So it was a pretty impressive period in history because it was in the full depression. It was giving people jobs. It was creating infrastructure that really worked, was needed. And I mean, we could use a little of that today, actually.
My guest today is Donald McDonald. He is an architect of the new east span of the San Francisco Bay Bridge and co-author of a new book called Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon. And it is iconic already, even though the bridge hasn't even opened. The Golden Gate Warriors are using it as their logo now. And already it has become an icon for the Bay Area. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I want to ask you about this book. What made you decide to write a book about and illustrate the book? Because it's your illustrations, your wonderful drawings and throughout the book. What made you decide to do this? Is this for I assume it's for lay people because it's very readable and it tells the whole natural history of the Bay Area, how people in San Francisco and Oakland got around before there was ever a bridge. The construction of the first Bay Bridge and now the construction of the new span on the east side.
Well, I'll tell you what brought it about. I did a book on the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's sold really well, and it's still selling well. And I thought that no architect had really sat down and explained to the public, how bridges work from an architectural point of view. The engineers talk a lot about it, but the communication between engineers and the layman is difficult sometimes. So I decided to try to break that barrier down. But the idea, once I'd done the Golden Gate Bridge, I'd done a lot of work on Alcatraz, the building out there. When the Indians occupied it in 69 to 71, I was part of that occupation. It was sort of my days from Oklahoma where I had a real sense of the Indians sort of thing in my mind. So I joined them on that protest where they took Alcatraz. So I master planned that, and I wrote a book on Alcatraz, and that's done very well, too. So it came out about a year ago. They're all the same size. And then I did one, the Bay Bridge, because I felt that it was a trilogy of the Bay. Three basic icons that are in the Bay, and there's so much history and involved in that most people aren't aware of the amount of people involved in building structures and the prisoners. And it just had a wonderful thing. And I was probably the only person that I know of that's worked on all those three projects. And so I figured, well, I might as well put a book together. From an architectural point of view, I'm not really a historian, but and researching these books, it became quite interesting that if you got the three of them, and like if you're here for AmeriCup, which is on now, the race goes between the two bridges and between Alcatraz and the mainland, so you can get a real read on the history of this area. And so that's kind of what the reason I did it. And I illustrated it. In the illustrations, I pointed a lot of things in the illustrations to explain to a reader. If they open the book up, they can really get right into what was going on. Instead of having just an illustration, I illustrated them, but with wording and that, so they could really understand and pull things apart, things like that.
Now, what was most tricky about the construction, other than the politics? We may want to talk about the politics later, but because I would think there are lots of currents going through there. There's quite a few illustrations on the substrate, what's below the water in the bay.
Yeah, it is. It's a very difficult site to build on. It's, like I said, I've been on it 16 years, so part of the difficulty is just politics. But other than that, it's the bridge actually sits on mud. And as you drive a pile into the ground, you go about to 300 feet to get into the high-density mud soil. And then when the adhesion against the pole gets very difficult, then they've reached the limit of that pile. And that's sort of illustrated in the book how they get down there. But it's still on mud. The only part that's not on mud is the main tower. There happens to be a ledge of bedrock, and it sits on that. Mm-hmm. So it is a difficult site to work on. And the other thing they did is they spread the caissons as they went down, and that's more difficult than pounding them straight in, but you get a better stability when you do that. And then in the bridge itself, because of the earthquakes, we're right near the Hayward Fault, which is it's the most active fault, at least has been the last 100 years in this area. There's hinges in the bridge in what they call link beams, so when there's an earthquake, the bridge can move like a shock absorber.
Mm-hmm.
And take minimal damage, and it can still be used after a major earthquake. And those innovations in the hinges of the viaduct part of it and in the link beams in the tower, they also are innovative, and so it'll be quite interesting because the tower has actually four legs on it, and between those legs there are what they call link beams. And the steel used in those link beams is a weaker steel than what's on the tower, so if there's an earthquake and there's movement, those legs are going up and down, back and forth. That steel is mild and it'll break or bend and absorb the seismic shock. Then they can come back. The bridge can still remain open. Then they can come back and pull those link beams out and put new ones in. So Same thing with these hinges. They have a sliding pipe inside them with a fusible part in the middle of that. That kind of movement of up and down and back and forth, it can be absorbed by that, and they'll still stay in place. So those are the innovations. Another one is that they have a prefabricated cable system where it's over a mile long, and they pull it up from an anchorage plate on one side up to the tower top, through the tower top, down the side, and then they wrap it underneath the western end of the bridge. And that's another pretty interesting innovation where it's one cable holding the whole bridge up. So
wow.
The main span of that.
And what is it, over a mile long?
That cable is, yeah. It comes in what they call strands. Those are sections of cable that are prefabricated. They're all a different dimension. And each strand has 127 wires in it. And that strand is, there's, I think, 138 strands, and they're pulled up in groups. And then when they're all in place, they wrap them with collars, then they wrap them again with wire to tighten up the bundling. And then they hang suspended cables off of that. So anyhow, it's quite interesting what's going on, because a lot of it's innovative, but there's also, it's been highly tested in computer models where they'll shake a bridge and things like that. So it's, anyhow, it's pretty interesting just to watch it happen and be part of it for 16 years.
That's right. And it is the world's largest self-anchored suspension bridge.
It's actually further defined by the single tower. It's the largest single tower to self-anchoring. There's a double tower, bigger one in Korea, but this one is the longest single.
Well, my guest today is Donald McDonald, the architect of the new east span of the San Francisco Bay Bridge and co-author of Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon. And he's built bridges around the country, around the world, I think Dubai.
Right.
And you actually did a design here in Oklahoma that I wanted to ask you about. It didn't win. It's where the new pedestrian bridge is over I-40 in Oklahoma City. But I've seen on your website the design, and it was a beautiful pedestrian bridge that sort of evoked the Conestoga wagon, if you will.
Yeah, I think on that was, because Oklahoma, the image that people have at Oklahoma is the Sooners, the football team and all that. I felt that I'd take that idea and bring it into a bridge. And I worked with Olvar up out of London, England, who are top-notch engineers in this world. And we thought it would really brand the city, you know. You could say, okay, you're in Oklahoma City, where I think the one that won was like a bird or something.
It was kind of like
form,
a...
Which is good, a nice design, but, it didn't say it's Oklahoma,
Uh-huh. How much do you take into account when you're building a bridge or any sort of structure where you are? I mean, as far as where the place is, and I know you've built in Dubai, and it's a very whimsical bridge, given the Sail Hotel up there and all the interesting architecture that's part of Dubai.
Yeah. Well, Dubai is a place where you can, I dug into the culture, and they hunt with pedigreed falcons and that, and I felt that when the falcon is making a dive on some prey, it's got this incredible shape, and it fits well into a cable-stayed bridge, so I use that form to do it. And again, each bridge that I do comes out of what I call the context I'm working in. Like the one I done in Charleston, South Carolina, really comes out of the context in the sense that it's a flatlands, and the city itself is historical, and this bridge rises up like a sail, So from an airplane, when you're coming in, you definitely know you're in this part of the world, so...
Mm-hmm.
And the colors are all taken from local buildings as white and gray, and the scoring of concrete, things like that, that's where you mark a tower leg with certain forms so that it looks, you break the scale of this monolithic concrete element down.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you about the single span of the east span. I read recently that in the book, you say one of the inspirations for that single span was a Saturn V rocket. And I think you said that you kept it to yourself when you were first proposing it because people would think you're nuts. But
Well, I'd have to explain it. And sometimes when I've done probably 30 public hearings on the bridge, and there's certain things I don't bring. I don't talk about the golden section, the golden triangle, because when I get into that, then I have to be, it's like architecture 101. I have to go back and explain where it came from, the history. And usually, the time you have in front of the audience isn't that long, so you have to be more concise. And so what I did is, when I started designing the tower, I was looking for what I thought would be symbols of the 21st century, because the bridge is designed to last at least 100, 150 years, and so I wanted something that was ageless. So I felt that the 21st century would have more exploration in space, and that the rocket itself, when you look at them, some of them, they have the form of a bridge tower. They have a wide base. They taper as they go up. They have these dark slots on the side. So a lot of it. So I picked that form and I used it. But like I said a bit ago, I didn't want to mention to the public until the book came out because I felt that, you know, somebody said, "Oh, come on, it's not a rock, it's just a tower. Where'd you go using that?" So, but anyhow, that was part of the deal to get it into so it would last, you know, 100 years or 200. That's another thing about using geometry in design. In fact, I learned that from the Bruce Goff School when I was there, that geometry, Frank Lloyd Wright used it. You know, in other words, if you analyze a lot of Goff's buildings, you'll find they're pure geometry just about. And the reason it's pretty important today that those are being revived, hopefully, is that today fractals play a big part in design. It's part of nature, and I don't want to get into it because it's more complicated to talk about it, but there are many things that relate to what Goff's ideas, what he was doing, that aren't even being taught in architecture today, and it's a shame.
Yeah. So is the opening of the Bay Bridge still supposed to be on Labor Day? Is that right?
It's supposed to be. They're not sure it's going to open or not. It's been canceled for the moment, but there's some quick fixes because they've had some bolt problems, and it could open. They still haven't made the official announcement, but they're to sort of warm the public up that it might not open up on time. So.
Now, what's your feeling when a bridge opens? I mean, you know that that the engineering is good. You've spent so much time with it, but until traffic actually crosses it, I would think there's at least a little bit of trepidation. Is there?
Well, on my part, mine is not so much. The engineers have a little concern about their reputation, I think, because the bolt problems right now. But
yeah,
you know, the reports we've had, people think we've done a beautiful job. They think it's a beautiful piece of the infrastructure of this part of the world, and I'm very happy. And you know, seeing I'm getting older now, I'm quite happy I had the opportunity to participate. But what's really interesting is the esprit de corps about everybody on that bridge. They all realize they're part of history, and so you know, there'd be more books come out on it and all that. But I wanted to explain to the public the concerns we had to make something, you know, really beautiful, and that's another reason I did the book.
Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing it on the America's Cup races when it comes to San Francisco later this summer. And we look forward to the opening of the Bay Bridge. And it's a very interesting book, and give us architect's insight into how you build bridges. And it's so beautiful to see America building beautiful bridges, these statements, you know, because when you think of like the Brooklyn Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, even a modernist bridge like the Tampa Bay Bridge, you know, these are iconic structures that sort of define where you are.
Yeah, I agree with you on that for sure, anyhow.
Well, we look forward to it. Donald McDonald, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Donald McDonald is a San Francisco-based architect and the designer of the east span of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. His new book about the project and the history of that location is titled Bay Bridge, History and Design of a New Icon. It's published by Chronicle Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.